program. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Richard Pollack and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And the website is www.illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
And let's welcome to the program. He's a good friend of ours. He's from the Montreal Gazette, Pat Hickey. Pat, good afternoon. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, good afternoon to you, Drew.
Pat, obviously we're gonna spend this talking about the removal of the general manager duties from Pierre Gauthier and all the candidates and everything else. You know, this is the question that we've had, and we were just discussing this last segment. You know, it appeared throughout the course of the year, as things went from bad to worse in Montreal, that Gauthier was going to be a lame duck general manager. If that was the case, why did the organization still allow him to make trades throughout the course of the season?
Well, I think that, you know, as they made different moves, I don't think they, I think there was probably consensus that, you know, the moves he made after they had made this, after it was pretty obvious that he wasn't going to be around, they were moves that would have been made by anybody. And, I think that, that they were probably rubber stamped by the ownership and things like that. Basically, the main move was Andre Kostitsyn. You knew they were going to get rid of him at some point because he's unrestricted free agency coming up, and they just got whatever they could for him. They picked up Brad Stovitz on waivers. Again, a fairly insignificant deal. So, I think that they were going to let the heavy lifting, whatever it's going to be, to the new general manager. And, there was just a feeling that, that Gauthier was, really couldn't do any more harm. And so I think that's why they, I was a little surprised by the, by the timing. I thought, either they should have done it earlier or, they would have waited a little while, until at least till the end of the season. But it makes sense now. They've got Larry Carrier is basically, he's in charge. He's the interim general manager, although they're not calling him that. And he's in charge of everything. But his main responsibility will just be to carry this team through the draft. And hopefully by the time free agency starts, not that they're going to be a major player, but they'll have somebody in place at that point.
Pat, if you had to point to one to Pierre Gauthier's biggest flaw, his one biggest flaw, what would that be?
Firing Jacques Martin.
And is that because at that point in time he was staking his, putting his every all of his eggs in one basket in terms of Cunningworth and the success of the franchise?
Yeah, I don't think he put any faith in Cunningworth. I think basically what he was trying to do was covering his butt. I think that he was afraid that he might be on the line, and he had to be seen to be doing something, and he sacrificed his friend, Jacques Martin, the guy he hired. And I just thought it was if you look at what's happened to the team since then, they were pretty close to a playoff spot. I think they were 2 points out when they fired Martin, and of course now they're in last place in the Eastern Conference. That's not really a reflection on Randy Cunningworth's work.
Right.
He was put in an impossible situation. They fired Jacques Martin just before the team was going on their annual Christmas road trip, which has been a disaster for as long as I can remember. They were 6 games on the road, 3 before Christmas, 3 after Christmas. They went 1-5 on that trip, and it was all downhill from there. The day after they hired Cunningworth, they basically said, there's no way he's going to be able to keep the job because he couldn't speak French. And so he was put in a very difficult situation. And I feel sorry for him because, I don't think he got a chance to show what he could really do. And, I don't think that, I think looking at objectively, I don't think he's an NHL head coach. But I certainly don't think he was given a chance to prove one way or the other whether he was.
The relationship between Martin and Gauthier, is that now strained because of that move?
I would think so.
Yeah. We saw something similar with Carboneau and Gainey a while back, correct?
And with Carboneau and Gainey, that's right. Yeah. They're best friends for years. They haven't talked since the day that Gainey fired Carboneau. Carboneau's still not sure why he got fired.
Wow.
And one of the things that I think makes it interesting now is that I believe that both of those guys should be considered for the coaching job. And I think that there's a possibility that they would be amenable to talking about it now that the guys who fired them in both cases are now gone.
Pat, a little bit lost in the shuffle was the simultaneous letting go of Bob Gainey. And obviously, you know, Jeff Molson, it must have been difficult for him to make that decision. How difficult do you think it really was for him to make that decision? And what was Bob Gainey?
I don't think it was very difficult at all. I think Bob offered his resignation. I think that, you know, it was Bob who hired Gauthier, you know, and I think he just, you know, I think his inclination probably would have been to keep Gauthier. And, you know, when the decision was made to fire him, I think Bob felt that, you know, it was best for the organization, best for himself, best for Jeff Molson just to step out of the picture.
What kind of impact did Bob Gainey still have in the role that he had with Pierre Gauthier as an advisor?
Nobody's really sure, but probably there was probably some influence there. I do know that at the trading deadline that there was a suggestion that the two guys were not on the same wavelength, that Gauthier wanted to basically blow the team up again and was offering anybody and everybody in deals, whereas Gainey thought that they were still only a couple of players away from being a winning team again and that they should try to keep the move to a minimum.
We're joined on the
league. That's just...
Go ahead, Pat.
You know, I have no evidence that was really the case. I mean, that's just the... Mm-hmm. The scuttlebutt that's around.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Pat Hickey. Pat's a columnist with the Montreal Gazette.
Pat, the Habs, obviously, you know, the next topic now, we've looked back now looking forward to the possible GM candidates. Now, we've heard names like Julien Brisebois, he's in Tampa Bay, obviously Pierre Maguire on NBC now, and Claude Loisel working in Toronto. There's a number of other candidates that have been mentioned as well. Do you think there's any, you know, top three favorites heading into the offseason here?
Well, I would think that Mark Bergevin, the assistant general manager of Chicago, is pretty well near the top of the list. I think there's Julien Brisebois will certainly be considered. And if I had to pick a third candidate, I think Pierre Maguire will probably get an interview, but I don't think he'll be the guy.
Pat, aside from the historic aspect of being the GM of the Montreal Canadiens, it's obviously the most famous franchise and the most fabled franchise in hockey and arguably in all of sports. How would you rate the appeal of this job as GM of the Habs as far as where the Habs are at right now and what their challenges are coming up?
Well, I think that anybody that takes the job faces a very difficult task. The one thing is, you know, you look at the general manager's job, and it's fairly stable. This is the first general manager. I think there have been 8 or 9 coaching changes since the last general manager was changed in 2010. General managers tend to have a much longer shelf life than coaches do. That hasn't been the case in Montreal. You know, we've had Andre Savard, we've had Gainey, we've had Réjean Houle. Mm-hmm. Ever since Serge Savard was fired, we've had a succession of general managers. Now Gauthier. It seems that there's less patience in Montreal than there are in some other franchises, and I think it's going to be very difficult to bring this team back. You know, it'll take 2 or 3 years because of the contract situations that they have. And they're going to have to make some hard decisions. And some of them they're just not going to be able to do because of the money involved. They'll probably get rid of the Scott Gomez contract either by buying him out or sending him to the minors. But they have a bad contract in Thomas Cabrillet. Mm-hmm. It looks like they have a bad contract in Rene Bourque. They've got Brian Giotto for a few more years. He had 3 injuries this year.
Andre Markov.
Like, you know, he's at a point where he might have broken down. You got Markov has 2 more years. You're not sure, you know, where he's going to be. I mean, he's back playing now, but there's still a question of, you know, whether is he going to be back to 80% of where he was, 90% of where he was? Will he ever be 100%? You know, at 80 or 85%, he's probably good enough to play in this league, but still he has a huge contract, $5.75 million. And, you know, it's a difficult contract to have. If you could take that money and get a big physical defenseman, which is one of the things that they need right now. And, you know, again, that's a contract that you might have said, you know, maybe that wasn't a good idea signing him to – to a three-year contract, not knowing where he was as far as his health.
Pat, this will be we'll leave you on this question, and we'd be remiss if we didn't ask you about Patrick Waugh. Of course, he's a lightning bolt of information and an outcry generally. You know, if he ends up in a new, you know, in a role with the new Quebec Nordiques organization, if there is a new Quebec Nordiques organization and not in a role with the Canadiens, would there be an outcry in Montreal?
Well, there will be an outcry in some areas, yeah. You know, I think there might be an outcry if he doesn't become the head coach, you know, going into this coming year. As a reporter, from a purely selfish point of view, I'd love to have him because he's outrageous and he's over the top and he's very emotional and passionate. And I'm just looking at it dispassionately, though. I don't think he'd be a good coach. And I think that anybody that thinks he is should just look at the situation with Dale Hunter in Washington. Because you have similar situation. You have guys who had success at the junior level.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at the organizations that they were with, the organizations that had lots of money, were able to manipulate the draft, were able to buy players, coach guys, you know, into playing junior rather than go to college and things like that. You don't have a motivation question in junior hockey. These guys are all trying to get to the next level, so they're all working hard. But it's quite a different matter when you go coaching in the NHL.
Pat Hickey of the Montreal Gazette, thanks very much for joining us this afternoon on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Anytime, guys.
Thanks, Pat. Take care.
Thanks a lot, Pat.
Let's go to break. You're listening to Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to our guest, the previous segment, Pat Hickey of the Montreal Gazette. In case you missed any of that interview or any of the show, be sure to download the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on iTunes, subscribe and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. Remember to follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And the website is www.illegalcurve.com. This segment is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For over 25 years, Rumors has been Winnipeg's home for the best in stand-up comedy. For a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. And we're going to take it one step further. First two callers to 780-1290. First two callers to 780-1290. You win tickets to Rumors for this coming Wednesday to see Shane Mouse, very funny comedian who's at Rumors until next Saturday. First two callers, 780-1290. You're going to win tickets to Rumors. Give Michael Remus a call at 780-1290. Gentlemen, I guess I should have told you ahead of time, Timmy. This is the news and notes segment.
NHL news and notes.
I salute you. You had it ready. I'm very impressed. You were able to, you read my mind well ahead of that. Let's start with the news coming out of Quebec City that happened late last week, Sunday. So I guess early this past week, late last week, I'm not sure which, that they're going to be finally building that arena to replace Le Colisée, $400 million facility. Not sure about the moat status of it all. Does this tell you that they're going to be renovating the Colisée as well? Does this tell you that they're getting their eggs in a basket for the Phoenix Coyotes this season?
You think so.
But Gary Bittman doesn't want to be offended by the people. They can make assumptions and putting pressure on him because, you know, he has all this leverage of having taxpayers in Phoenix pay for a team they don't care about for millions of dollars. Give me a break. They're getting it ready for Quebec City. That's where it should go. It makes the most sense. Just stop trying to force it into the States by forcing it into Key Arena with 12,000 seats and all of them are being obstructed. Like Gary's, you know, stop trying to fool people, Gary. You've had a lot of failures in your tenure, and this is one of them, and just admit it and move on.
Yeah, I'm going to take a stab in the dark here and guess that the Quebec government, along with obviously the private sector has some money involved, they're not building a $400 million arena for a National Lacrosse League team. they're building this arena for an NHL team, and they're going to renovate Le Colisée because there's a good chance that the Phoenix Coyotes will be moving there So the wheels are in motion, and that's good to see. Yeah, they're getting their eggs in the in a basket, and you know, things are moving forward. And you know, now that they've made this announcement, you know, the shovels will be in the ground pretty soon, and they're going to get their arena, which they've wanted for years now. So it's good to see that things are progressing. As far as, you know, will the Coyotes be in Quebec City next year? It's a possibility. We don't know yet, but it's a good possibility.
Do you see any way that, I mean, unless they put bring another $25 million to the table in Glendale, is there any way that they're not in Quebec City?
They try and stuff them down Seattle's throats, but they can't make money there if the owner doesn't really want them there. So, yeah, I think it's Quebec City or bust.
Well, it sounds like the guy who's building that new arena in Seattle doesn't want to own the Coyotes.
Right, so he doesn't want to own the Coyotes, and they have to rent from him. If they rent from him, they're not going to make any money.
Which we've seen that the only way to make money in the NHL is to own the arena.
That's what the Jets had a problem with the first time around.
I think your best options, Drew, for a relocation is Quebec City at this point, and maybe if there ever is expansion, maybe Seattle. If there is ever expansion.
To Gary, you know, give it up. Stop trying to pull the wool over our eyes. Everybody sees it. You have this team operated by the NHL for, what, 3 years now in Phoenix? Nobody cares. You built it because you got some free arena in Glendale. You put it way too far away. You had no foresight there. Nobody cares. Nobody's in Phoenix. They're losing millions of dollars. Cut your losses.
And I mean, if the clock was ticking last year... I mean, the clock is broke at this what clock is ticking now? I mean, it's almost just
it's true.
It was enough a year ago. Now I mean, I don't know what you can say anymore about the situation. It's clear, Drew, that there is absolutely nobody that's going to buy the team in Phoenix and keep that team in Phoenix. If it's going
to
happen.
I love you get the article once in a while. There's new owners rumored to be interested in the team.
Thanks.
It's like, yeah, okay. Thank you, Plant at the NHL, for putting that article out there once every 3 months.
Yeah, exactly. It's just a fake article. Let's move to Edmonton, where Taylor Hall is going to undergo a season-ending shoulder surgery.
Yep.
He's been out for a while now. It's a labral shoulder surgery. Now, I'm not an orthopedic surgeon, so I...
But you'll take a look.
No. I won't take a look, but, anyways... The most concerning part of this is that he's, Taylor Hall said he first hurt his shoulder 4 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about the concussion, and now we're talking about the shoulder. 5 to 6 month injury, though, Drew. It's like a 2 week, 3 week, a month, 2 months. 5 to 6 months, that's a very significant injury.
Yep, and yeah, he played for Windsor, and that was obviously, you know, a concern back then, but.
And the concussion issue is a concern back then. Again, yep. We talk about having to change his game a little bit. I mean, you don't want him to have to change his game too much, because then you worry that he won't be as effective.
Should the Oilers have shut him down earlier? You know, get the shoulder, get it cleared out. I mean, what are the Oilers playing for this year?
Yeah, good point. Good
point. They probably should have.
Steve Tambellini is no rocket scientist, though.
So I mean, that just seems like they're playing with fire there. If you have a young player who might be, Winnipeg Jets fans know what a degenerative shoulder looks like on a player.
Eric Fair.
His name's Eric Fair.
It's unfortunate.
It's terribly tragic. I mean, that's when it just goes from bad to worse.
It's unfortunate.
And as tragic as bad as it is for Eric Fair, and as bad as it is for the Winnipeg Jets, it would be astronomically worse if
you got mad for the Edmonton Oilers earlier today for saying catastrophic.
It would be astronomically worse for the Edmonton Oilers as a franchise, not in the grand scheme of life, but as a franchise, if their young stud, yes, Taylor Hall, had a degenerative shoulder issue that affected his entire career.
And we know all about being degenerates here.
Well, that we do.
Well, and that's just the thing with the Edmonton Oilers is, they're a bottom feeder again this year. And when you look at what they've done, they've had the luxury of all of these first overall picks with Taylor Hall and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. And then they also got Eberle in the first round, but later. And that's what you're there. It's clear they're going forward with all of these forwards. And without Taylor Hall, I mean, you've still got Eberle, you've still got Nugent-Hopkins, and Hemsky's under contract now. You've still got good forwards.
Oh, and you're still going to have going to have a top three pick this year.
Absolutely. So they're not maybe as hurt as much as another team, but Taylor Hall is a huge part of that. Very, very talented forward.
It just doesn't make any logical sense why you play with fire in that case when you know that the guy's shoulder is bothering him and it's been bothering him for a couple of years. You get it cleared out. You get him, you know, what are you losing? You know,
may not be ready for next season, by the way.
Well, it's a 6-month injury. Is
They're
it not?
Hoping yeah. when you're hoping that he'll be back now.
Like, well,
there's a chance he.
How much worse could the Oilers be? They're already in second last in the NHL. No. If they didn't have Taylor Hall from the All-Star
Great
game,
point.
Let's
they'd
say,
be last. So
they'd be in last.
I don't
so
know if
cares.
They would be last. Columbus has been that bad.
Yeah, I mean that's just why it doesn't make any sense for how they handled that. Let me ask this question. Next topic in news and notes: Christian Ehrhoff out indefinitely for the Buffalo Sabres. What does that do if the Sabres do make it into the playoffs? How does that affect their playoff chances?
It affects their power play, especially because you got rid of Gregani, so you can't drop him in there now.
Mike Weber's also injured.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's an issue in terms of the puck moving. Now you put more pressure on a guy like Tyler Myers.
Yep.
Needs to increase an offensive role. But, I mean, they play forwards on the point, too, on the power play. So,
you know,
the
puck Almondville.
Puck moving from the offensive, from the defensive zone at even strength, it hurts them. Power play, they can replace it. It hurts them a bit, but it's harder at even strength.
Absolutely, it's not good for them. But still, even without Ehrhoff, it is a team that's that's deep enough that they could upset a team like the Rangers. But not good. I mean, you got him for this exact reason. You got him because you needed him when it came to the playoffs, and it's unfortunate. But you know, they're going to have to find a way to replace him.
Wrapping up news and notes with the following. The Vancouver Canucks have released, I don't even know what you possibly call this. They've released, I guess, a public service announcement, hoping that their fans, you know, reminding their fans to take pride in their city under the title, "This is Our Home."
Please don't riot.
Please don't riot, pretty much, is what it is. "This is Our Home" shares a message of unity, respect, and civic pride using the collective voice of Canucks fans, players, and alumni. Filmed in over 20 locations throughout Greater Vancouver, "This is Our Home" features Vancouver Canucks captain Henrik Sedin, Kevin Bieksa, Ryan Kessler, Manny Malhotra, and Daniel Sedin, along with Trevor Linden and Stan Smeal. "This is Our Home" promotes a simple message of the inclusive and positive nature of sports and community.
Drew, this message wants me to go. Is making me want to go home. Like, what is this? What's going on here?
Okay, hold on. So this is a
how did this crack the topic?
This is a promotional video.
This is a video for
video.
This is a promo and a video for. Really, Vancouver fans, the Canucks telling their fans to, well, not throw things at Gary Bettman when they see him, if they see him, and not riot if their team loses in the Stanley Cup
finals. Why did you need
finals?
A video to tell your own fans to behave? That seems like, you know...
Was what's his name in it? Tony Robbins?
The motivational speaker?
Yeah.
I'm not sure if he
this
was...
Like a, this seems like one of those pay for, on TV, on those ads. Like for, like, the Eggy.
All you
have a rolling out like the Eggy and the Sticky, just going on and on about not rioting.
All you need to do is have a press conference, and the general manager just has to make his point. I don't know why what a video is going to do. I think it's kind of a waste of time.
Well, if they would simply just if they would just admit that there is no gigantic conspiracy theory in the NHL to punish the Vancouver Canucks, that would also go a long way to easing the fans' emotions, I suspect.
But you know what I mean, Drew? Have Mike Gillis, have a press conference, get the media there and say, we don't want to have any repeat, let's behave ourselves. And, I mean, come on. I mean, it seems like almost like a father telling his children, okay, guys, you're not 5 years old anymore. I mean, it was a disgrace. It was a horrible thing that happened last year. You know, most of Vancouver wasn't happy about it, and they realized that. There was arrests, albeit a little bit late.
Well, they had to get... Anyways, it's not important. It's just comical that this is what it's...
I'm just saying this is what
they've had to resort to in Vancouver. Before we go to break, congratulations to David and Mike. They are the winners of the Rumors tickets for Wednesday night's show. So, David and Mike, congratulations. You'll be off to Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. Just after 2 p.m., let's go to break. When we come back, Craig Button of TSN is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day on TSN 1290. 2 hours down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com. We're going to get to Craig Button of TSN coming up momentarily. In the meantime, Ezzy, you looking well today?
You as well.
Thank you. Anyways, we'll get Craig on the line coming up. It's time to focus our attention now onto the NHL entry draft, because that's where, that's going to be the area where the Jets' next big move is going to be made. You know, fans need to start getting acquainted with the different different prospects out there, the different guys who are going to be taken at the top of the draft class here. And if you look at the draft class, it is a very interesting one, especially in that, you know, based on Craig Button's rankings, the number five guy in those rankings has not even played a game this year because he's been injured all year.
Right.
So, I mean, there is certainly a high-risk, high-reward scenario at play when you come to the NHL entry draft this year.
Right. And, you know, it's about the draft is just over 2 months away. It usually comes in – oh, no, it always comes in late June. It's in Pittsburgh this year.
That's right.
And you're right. I mean, the Jets are going to have some extra draft picks. Pardon me, not extra draft picks. They're going to have some maybe extra decisions to make with a lower pick. You know, like we said before, it'll be in probably a little bit later than the last year. It won't be seventh overall like they had last year when they took Mark Scheifele. It'll probably be in between 10 and 15. And this year, it's not really known if this will be a stronger draft class than last year at all. But, you know, of course, it's going to be a big decision. The Jets are going to have to continue to develop through the draft, and especially with a couple. It's not as strong as necessarily 2004, but it's going to be interesting. And yeah, we're going to talk to Craig Button shortly and get some of his opinions.
You know, the player I'm talking about is Alex Galchenyuk, and we'll talk to Craig about that. And I mean, you know, Richie, how do you judge that? The guy who hasn't played all year. You know, we got Craig on the line, so I'll hold your thoughts on that. Let's go.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Let's welcome back to the program Craig Button from TSN. Craig, welcome back to the show. How are you this afternoon?
I'm really good. How are you guys?
We're doing well, thank you. We're focused now that the Jets are, you know, barring a miracle, are not going to be playoff bound. We're really focusing our attention now onto the NHL entry draft. So, who better to contact than the draftmeister himself, Craig Button?
No, thanks.
How do I get on Craigslist?
Oh,
how do you get on it?
Yeah. Well, I guess I'd have to be 11 years younger.
Well, okay, age might have a factor, but some kind of dynamic skills that'll really identify you being able to help an NHL team.
He was once the first overall draft pick in the Jewish Hockey League. Does that factor in at all?
Can you name the Jewish players in the National Hockey League?
The current ones?
Yeah.
Mike Camilleri.
That's one.
Ronnie Stern isn't still in the NHL.
No, Matthew Schneider isn't. Jeff Halpern.
That's right.
Yeah, Jeff Halpern.
And I think that's it.
That's two more than there usually are, so we got that going for us. Craig, let's start with the 2012 entry draft class. You know, how would you evaluate the strength of that class?
Well, I mean, one of the things that I always say, and what happens with a draft is so much of when we talk about the strength of a draft, it seems to always fall into how good is the top end of a draft. I mean, does it have a Stamkos? Does it have a Crosby? And it goes from there. Does this year's draft have those players? No, it doesn't. But I think how you can look at this draft, just like any other draft, is that the vast majority of drafts, because there are some drafts that just, in terms of talent, just aren't as deep and certainly don't have the same quantity of players. But this draft, to me, has a lot of defensemen, a lot of different types of defensemen in it. And whether you want a big, strong defenseman, whether you want an offensive defenseman, whether you want a guy that, you know, can really fit into your... a diminutive defenseman. You know, there seems to be more of those guys that can really skate and jump into the attack, and teams aren't reluctant to draft them anymore. Ryan Murphy went 12th overall last year. You know, in Winnipeg, teams get to watch, the fans get to watch Tobias Enstrom on a regular basis, and these players are getting picked in the first round now. So I think depending on what your team would like and what your makeup of your team is, you know, if you have a couple of big defensemen, you might want to, you might say, hey, listen, we can take this 6-foot defenseman. Conversely, if you have a couple of 6-foot defensemen, you might say, hey, I'm going to take a bigger defenseman. Mm-hmm. So I think that, you know, it's really wide open in terms of those defensemen because, quite frankly, I think that there's a whole bunch of them that are, depending on your likes and dislikes, your needs, that can fit into any particular situation.
Craig, the Jets are teetering right around the 10th spot right now, and I guess some people are wondering, is there a point in about the top 15 where there's a kind of a significant drop-off in talent?
Yeah, I don't know if there really is. You know, you're watching now. I mean, I heard the same thing last year. You know, is there a drop-off, where it's at? And so many of the players, what happens over the course of a season when you're scouting is players get better. And players, you know, that, you know, were different stages of maturity at the beginning of the year or at Christmas time have started to blossom. And they gain confidence and they're assured in their play. And they start to rise up the ranks, so to speak. And I don't think there's any better example than Mark Scheifele last year. And he wasn't the only one that ended up going into the top 10. So I think there's a lot of quality players in the top 10, in the top 10 of this draft, 12. And when you start, again, I'm going to go back to the defensemen. And I'll just give you an example. Matt Dumba, who I think is a terrific prospect, right, and one that I think is going to be a dynamic NHL player. If somebody said, listen, you know what, we really like Matt Dumba, but we're going to take Derek Pouliot, who might be rated after the top 10, like, it's not one of those ones where you go, oh, geez, I'm going to scratch my head. That's a head scratcher. You know, and that's what I mean about the quality of player. I don't see a real significant drop-off. And with the defensemen, because there's so many of them, and a lot of different kinds, I think you could see somebody that maybe somebody expects to go top 10, maybe go 15, and conversely somebody that you thought might go 10 to or 11 to 20 end up in the top 10.
Craig, we want to ask you about another one of those defensemen, and even though the draft rankings have remained relatively stable, Cody Ceci of the Ottawa 67s, right now on Craigslist, he's number 9, and he's jumped from 20 to number 9. Can you tell us a little bit about his game? Because he's a guy that hasn't been talked about that much this year.
Yeah, you know, and he's the perfect example of a player that I talk about when you look at the maturity, you look at the ability to just gain a command in the game. And, you know, with Cody, I mean, he's big, he can skate. But, you know, the last few times I've watched him play, you're watching this player that can just dominate in every area of the game. I mean, whether it be on the power play, whether it be penalty killing, whether it be in situations where their team is trying to play with the lead, if their team is trying to get back into the game and generate offense, he can get the puck out of their own zone, either skating or with passing. He can jump into the attack. He uses his body. He's not a punisher, but he's a hard player to play against because he knows how to use his body. He knows how to get in there and lean on opponents. And what I see with him, guys, is just that development of a player that understands not only how to play, but how to impact the game. And that, in a nutshell, is why I see him as a top 10 player.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, and we're joined by TSN's draft expert, Craig Button. You can find all of his draft work on tsn.ca/draftcenter, including Craigslist. That's the top 60 in the upcoming NHL entry draft, updated monthly, if I'm not mistaken. Is that right, Craig?
That is correct.
Just making sure. Any chance, you know, the guy at the top of the draft has been there pretty much from the get-go. Any chance that Nail Yakupov is not the first name announced in June in Pittsburgh?
Yeah, I think there is. I definitely think there is. And, you know, this is where circumstances come into play. I mean, there's a lot of talk that Columbus is going to consider trading that pick. And depending on what team would want to get there or, you know, what player they think might be a better pick for them, I could see that. I've said this before, and right now I have Michael Grigorenko 7th on my list. But I could make a case for Columbus to draft Michael Grigorenko 1st overall. And I would say that I think it could be a really, really excellent pick. And I'll tell you why. I do not see Michael Grigorenko as a top number one elite center. But I see him as an excellent number two center. And the fact is, the Columbus Blue Jackets, in my view, have that elite number one center in Ryan Johansson. And centers like Ryan Johansson benefit from players like Michael Grigorenko, and players like Michael Grigorenko benefit from a player like Ryan Johansson. So you look at two big centermen, a player that I think is more temperament. His temperament is more to the second line center, and with the guy in front of him that can kind of do more of the heavy lifting, I could make that case. Would I do that? No, I wouldn't. But I could make that case, and that's why I can say, even though I think that Yakupov is an elite talent, he's got flair, he's got that excitement factor, is the best player in the draft, it wouldn't surprise me if he is not the first player selected.
Do you have any concern about these Russian players who might, you know, forego playing in the NHL if they get a, you know, just a tremendous offer from the KHL, like we just saw with Radulov just coming back to Nashville after all these years?
Yeah, you know, it's such a prevalent theme right now. But I mean, I think Radulov is a unique case, and I don't think he can lump all the Russians in that group. I mean, Yakupov could have gone back to Russia this year and played in the KHL. The offers were very lucrative. Michael Grigorenko could have done the same thing. But they chose to come to the CHL, as do a number of other Russian players, and they play and they commit. And I tend to look at the actions of the players over what speculation may be about what they may do in the future. And hey, riding the buses in the Western League or riding the buses in the Ontario League or the Quebec League, three games in 3 days and everything that goes with it, I think that's a pretty focused effort, a pretty focused effort on trying to be the best player you can be. And Radulov, you know, it was a different time when Radulov went back to the KHL. And I say that in the sense that the KHL was trying to get up and running. They were trying to go after the good young top players. They paid him a boatload of money to go back there. But now Radulov coming back, he says, the NHL is the best league on the planet, and I want to play with the best players against the best players. And I think that that becomes a big factor now in terms of the other players. And I think that's something that, again, I speak to their actions, speaking louder than their words. And, you know, the fact that they're here playing and they're committed, I mean, that says more to me than any other speculation.
Craig, you've talked about some of the dynamic, you know, top-end guys at the top three picks in terms of the forwards. If you look at the top 12, and you mentioned within this interview that the defense class is pretty strong, 8 of your top 12 players are defensemen. Does that speak to more so the talent of the defense class or maybe the weakness of the forward class?
Probably both. And, you know, every draft has its own identity, and you know, next year's draft, 2013, is going to be high-end forwards. There are going to be some terrific forwards that are going to go in the top 10, and we might be saying, does this speak to the strength of the forwards
or
the lack of the defense? So I think that you have to take a draft for what it is, and you have to look at what's available and where the talent is. And that's why I'm a huge proponent of you better take the best player, because when you're drafting 18-year-old players, those players aren't going to fix what your current NHL team needs going into next season. You know, their development time frame is 3 to 5 years. Mm-hmm. You know, some players do it a little quicker. More players probably are going in probably the 2 to 4 year range now rather than 3 to 5. But this is just, I think it's just this group in the 2012 draft is lots of good defensemen, lots of talent in the defense ranks, and next year will be lots of forwards, and I just think that it is. The other thing that I will say, too, I want to just add this, too, when we talk about it. I think there's two potentially elite goaltenders in this draft, and another one that I think could definitely be that has the potential perhaps to be one, but one that I will say right now that I think are elite, and the two of them are Malcolm Subban plays with Belleville, and Andrei Vasilevsky, who played with Russia in the World Junior Tournament, had a terrific tournament. So, you know, I also think we haven't seen goaltenders being drafted early on in the draft for quite some time now. And, you know, I think these two guys, like, I really believe that they're elite, too. So it's another consideration for the draft.
Given he's been injured all year, how big of a wild card would you say that Alexander Galchenyuk is? I mean, you know, he hasn't played a game this year, yet he's still fifth on your list. Do you see him possibly falling a little bit just because teams are going to be a little bit scared of the fact that he didn't play?
Yeah, you know, I think he used the word that I think is very appropriate. You just used it as a wild card. And I think when you haven't played, there's going to be some teams that have a lot more evaluations on him based on watching him as a 16-year-old and everything that goes with it. And there's going to be teams that aren't, and there's going to be teams that aren't as comfortable drafting a player that they haven't seen over the course of the last 8 months. So that's why he becomes a wild card, and that's why I think it's such an excellent choice of words, because when you're looking at a guy like him, I think he's an elite talent. I mean, I saw him play on Wednesday in a playoff game in Saginaw. I mean, he doesn't have the leg strength right now. He doesn't have the stamina. That's to be expected when you have a knee injury. You not only can't train, but it takes some time to come back and get your legs, so to speak. But based on what I've seen, and I've seen him 10 times since he entered the Ontario Hockey League, and there's nothing that I see that tells me he's not going to be a very, very good National Hockey League player. And, you know, that's what teams have to ultimately get to. They have to have that comfort level. And the one thing that I recognize, it's a lot easier for me to sit here and assess the players and say who I think is going to be a good NHL player and why. But the NHL teams have to feel really comfortable, and they have to have the courage to be able to call out the name and say, that's the guy we're putting our stake in the ground with. And, you know, it's a little bit different than what I'm saying. And that's why, again, I'll finish it with this, that's why he is a wild card.
Craig Button from TSN, you're our draft expert, and we're putting our stake in the ground on your reputation. Thanks very much for joining us this afternoon on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Craig. Craig. Thanks very much.
Yeah.
Let's go to break. You're listening to Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the program. A big thank you to Craig Button of TSN for joining us to talk NHL entry draft. In case you missed any of that interview, I highly recommend you subscribe to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on iTunes and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. Craig Button, just terrific analysis on the NHL entry draft. Anytime we have him on, he's always a top-notch guest.
He's on That's Hockey Tonight, too. He does a great job with Steve Koulias.
Yeah, and previously on the show, we had Pat Hickey of the Montreal Gazette on. Still to come, next segment, Ken Daniels, the Detroit Red Wings play-by-play guy, is going to join us. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Remember to send us your reasons why you think you should win a date with Ezra Ginsberg. Tweet that to us at Illegal Curve, and the best tweet gets a date with Ezzy. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website is www.illegalcurve.com.
Six things we learned this week.
Commence countdown. Six.
I'll start with Mr. Ginsberg this week.
Mr. Ginsberg, that's the first time
anybody's called
royalty.
You.
You've never called me that, Richie.
Royalty.
It's the first time anyone's called you Mr. without saying you're making a scene, right?
It's funny, because you've asked me to call you Julius Caesar for the last 3 years, so.
That's just odd. The Los Angeles Kings really knew what they had in Slava Voyanov when they traded Jack Johnson.
Yeah, and remember we had Jim Fox on 2 or 3 weeks ago. And, you know, he mentioned that they do believe Slava Voyanov can replace some of Jack Johnson's offensive talent, Richie. And I know that you haven't been as high on Jack Johnson, the hockey player, as you are on Jack Johnson, the surfer/singer.
That's true, yes.
But the LA Kings won last night. I was watching Slava Voyanov, really good skater. And, you know, he's got 19 points in 50 games this year. This is his first year in the NHL. He's 22 years old, and he actually already has 3 years of AHL experience in Manchester. He came from the Russian League and actually went right to the AHL. And you're seeing a lot of guys, you know, we spoke of Galchenyuk and Yakupov. A lot of Russian guys are now coming to the OHL and playing as opposed to playing maybe as a 17-year-old in the Russian League guys used to do back in the day. But Slava Voyanov, I think, is really a good talent. And Drew Doughty is obviously the quarterback of that back end in L.A., but Slava Voyanov, I really think that, you know, giving him the confidence, now that they've traded Johnson, now he's replacing some of that offense on the power play, I really think he's going to be a good defenseman, and I think they won't be as hurt as much, knowing that a guy like him can replace those offensive totals and minutes. So I think, you know, they really knew what they were doing there.
Five.
considering you haven't sent them to me, should I read your mind and try and read it?
You don't want to read my mind, Drew.
Yeah, there's a lot of naked naked people in my mind.
Jared Cowan has quickly become more than a solid National Hockey League defender. And, you know, Drew, to play a solid stay-at-home game, be able to move the puck and move and skate well, Jared Cowan can add all the aspects of the game. He's a nice complement to a guy like Erik Karlsson. He's a big stay-at-home guy. He can move the puck out of his own zone well, though, and he can skate and he hits. He doesn't get a lot of attention because he doesn't get a lot of points, but this is going to be a key for this defense moving forward because he is a nice contrast to the beautiful puck-moving skills of Erik Karlsson.
Can we start making fun of him now for this one, Richie?
I just don't even want to talk about it.
Corey Schneider cannot be a backup goaltender anymore?
He can't. I mean, he got a shutout.
Does that sound like this, a six things from a guy who was drinking last night, or does that sound like a six things from a guy who was drinking last night?
Absolutely not. But Corey Schneider, I mean, I would argue that Corey Schneider is a better goalie than Roberto Luongo and should be the number one goalie this year. This is the last year he's going to be a backup goaltender. He's got just under 94% save percentage. He can't. He's too good to be a backup goalie. Every time I watch Corey Schneider play, I'm thinking this guy should be the number one goalie on any team. And I think this will be the last year. Next year he's an RFA, and he'll be a number one goalie. He's been a backup goaltender for far too long. Three.
My powers of mind meld tell me, Richard, you're now thinking about something to do with cheesecake.
No. Torts.
Torts. Interesting.
More specifically, the New York Rangers.
Okay, go on.
Are we able to talk about this, Ezzy, or?
It's not a sore spot.
We'll talk about that last segment. We'll get into that.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's the Rangers' willingness, and it's led by Ryan Callahan, and the willingness to sacrifice the body and block shots for the greater cause. That's going to be one of the main reasons, and he's going to be one of the main reasons why or if the Rangers make a run, why they do make a run. Because Ryan Callahan.
Great leader.
He leads. He is a Don Cherry-type hockey player. Now, if he was a Canadian, you'd get him more attention. But he hits, he blocks shots, he leads, he scores goals. He does everything you can ask from a hockey player. He gives it all. He gives everything. He throws it on the line every night. And you talk about most valuable player. And you talk about Henrik Lundqvist. And Henrik Lundqvist is a tremendous goaltender, and he means the most to that team, sure. But I'm not so sure Ryan Callahan's importance is given enough attention, because Ryan Callahan may be as important as Henrik Lundqvist to the Rangers' cause, and his performance this year may lead some in the Rangers organization to think he's the team MVP. Two.
If the Nashville Predators are going to get past the second round and be a legitimate Stanley Cup contender, David Legault is going to have to elevate his game.
Right, guys, and all the Nashville Predators have made so many moves, going back to last year, but you think about the Paul Gostad move, getting Andre Kostitsyn, getting Mike Fisher last year. They've made a lot of moves, and you know, they're looking very good going into the Western Conference playoffs. Stanley Cup playoffs, but specifically against the Detroit Red Wings. And that's going to be a tough first-round matchup. You look at a guy like David Langwan, the first-ever pick for the Nashville Predators. He's not a first-line center, but he's a second-line center, and he's had a good year. But a guy like him, he's going to have to elevate his game in the playoffs. He's never really done that, and the Nashville Predators have never got out of the second round. But he's the key. Mike Fisher also, up the middle. Those guys are keys, but they're going to have to take the team and put it on their back a little bit here. You know, it starts in goal and then goes to defense. But really, to get farther in the playoffs, they're going to have to get goals from these guys. And these guys are going to have to lead by example. Because a lot of the guys on the Predators haven't got there. You look at who they've got, the Kostitsyn and Hornquist. These guys haven't had success in the playoffs. These guys are going to have to lead by example. Fisher has. But Legault specifically is going to have to elevate his game and take them to that next level. One.
Looking deep into your eyes, I think you're thinking about TRX at Yoga Public.
I'm not, but I should be. So should you, Drew.
You know what? I've been trying to get buff for the wedding, and TRX has been terrific.
Yes.
I mean, you've been enjoying the TRX. Ezzy, you got some TRX passes, and they've been collecting dust. But
you bailed on the time you're going to go with Drew and the time you're going to go with me.
Yeah.
I was never going to go with
Drew. No,
we don't talk outside the studio.
Yeah, exactly.
That was an...
I was in sync there. I was impressive.
Well, we both admit that we don't talk to each other.
Who's favorite band in sync?
The common theme, I think, moving through the playoffs is going to be movement from the back end. And I think that is, and that's been illustrated with the Ottawa Senators' turnaround this year. One of the strengths of the Nashville Predators, the Detroit Red Wings. If you have a defense that's able to move the puck quickly out of your own zone in this day and age, in transition games being what they are, I think that's going to be the key. And it might sound like an obvious statement, but you talk about goal scoring, you talk about defense, you talk about goaltending, you talk about numerous factors about the game, but just look at the huge change that Ottawa's seen this year, puck moving out of their own zone a lot more quickly. And you look at teams and what they're trying to acquire at the deadline. You look at Nashville's success. I mean, they don't score tons from up front. The puck gets out of their own zone so quickly that if they're not spending a ton of time in their own zone defending. And then that's something that I think is important. And when they defend, obviously, they keep to the outside. But the puck moving defense, so the teams, and you look at them, like the favorites. Vancouver moves the puck really nice from out of their own zone. Right? That's a team that can do that. Philly, you know, like Pittsburgh, for example, does that. Philly's got Coburn and Carl and guys who can move, you know. You're probably better apt to take the puck movers and give up some on the back end, on the defensive side of the game these days.
Six things we learned this week. When we come back on the other side, Ken Daniels, play-by-play voice of the Detroit Red Wings, is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Birchwood Chevrolet, Buick GMC Game Day on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com. Earlier this morning, we had the opportunity to sit down and talk to Ken Daniels, the play-by-play voice of the Detroit Red Wings. Here is the audio from that conversation. Let's welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show the play-by-play man for the Detroit Red Wings, Ken Daniels. Ken, good afternoon. Welcome to the program. How are you?
Great. Pleasure to be here.
That's good. Ken, let's start with the backbone of so many Detroit Red Wings teams over the last number of years. That's Nicklas Lidström. He had been out for a while. He's returned to the Wings lineup. It's certainly important that he be in the lineup for the Red Wings. What percentage would you put his health at?
I can only go, by what he says. So I think Nick's the type of guy that if he's not at 100%, he's not ready to go. And he had the time off with 11 games, and he wasn't rushing it by any means. So he says he's 100%. It's not at times he'll feel it, but for the most part, he says he's okay.
Ken, the Red Wings look like they may be, on a collision course with Nashville. Now, Chicago's still, close behind and could jump in there. If the Red Wings do play Nashville, what do you think concerns the Detroit management and coaching staff most about the Predators?
Well, I think it's, they'll tell you they're only worried about their own team, mm-hmm. but certainly it's their depth, and I know that, Ken Holland wouldn't be alone in not liking the fact that Alexander Radulov was able to return after the trade deadline. That was obviously tough to take, but that'll be tweaked in the next collective bargaining agreement. I guess, according to the rules, Nashville didn't really do anything wrong. So I guess it's their depth, and I guess maybe the only thing that would concern them, if you look at the other end, would be Pekka Rinne. But by the same token, I think they believe, and Jimmy Howard does too, that he can match up with them, and playoffs always come down to goaltending. And from what we saw from Rinne last night in the Nashville victory, yeah, he was terrific, and not that you could blame the loss on Jimmy Howard either, but Jimmy's getting to the point now where he has to get healthy because he's missed so many games, 7 this month and 8 previous. He hasn't really had that through his career. So he's coming around, and I think it's just important down the stretch here to get him into games, get him feeling comfortable, and I think if the team feels better about themselves, and despite the loss last night, I think things were better. Certainly they responded after the terrible game in Columbus on Wednesday. I think if they feel better about themselves, whether they're fourth or fifth, you're going to have to win sometime on the road. I think they're okay with the matchup.
Ken, conversely, what areas do the Detroit Red Wings think they could take advantage of when it comes to the Nashville Predators?
Well, I think, Detroit, not that you'd look at them as necessarily a fast team, and losing Darren Helm, I think, is a huge loss because I think they would have been so much better in that regard with Helm in the lineup. But I think, a veteran team who's been through it before, and Nashville, as good as they've been all year, and yes, Weber and Suter have been there, and they finally won a playoff series a year ago. But I think just their poise and under pressure poise, and I think that's what they've always relied upon when you've got strength down the middle. in Datsyuk and Zetterberg, and I know Nashville got Paul Gostad for faceoffs, but he sure wasn't very good last night. And if they're trying to match up that way, I think the Red Wings believe that their top two lines can certainly match up defensively and offensively with Nashville's top two lines. And if they try to play the likes of the Gostad or their third and fourth lines any more, then that's to the Red Wings' benefit. So I think just their depth and poise and experience, I think that's what they'll rely on to beat them.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Ken Daniels. He's the Red Wings play-by-play man. Ken, looking back to the trade deadline, the big move that the Red Wings made was acquiring, or reacquiring, to be more precise, Kyle Quincy. How has he performed? How has he fit in on the Red Wings blue line since the acquisition?
That's an interesting question, because I think Kyle himself has said he's trying to feel comfortable. He was okay early on, and then. But by the same token, there haven't been a set defense pairs, because with the injuries to Lidstrom, the injuries to Erickson, and then Kindle, who are all coming back now, I think it's been a little more difficult in that way for maybe Kyle to adjust. So he's got to find himself a regular partner. Mike Babcock down the stretch, and Kyle Quincy was a healthy scratch last night, and that's not necessarily an indictment of his play. But I think Jonathan Erickson coming back and Jakob Kindle coming in, they have to get Kindle time, so he replaced Kyle Quincy last night. So he's still trying to contribute. He's got a couple of goals and an assist. He's minus one in 15. So he's going to get to the point where I think they really like his puck-moving ability, and he knows familiar with the guys from before, so I don't think it should take him too long to settle down, but it's going to take him a little bit of a time.
Ken, there are a few teams that bring along prospects and develop players as the Red Wings do. One player who's continued to develop and seems to have broken through this year is Valtteri Filppula. Can you talk about his progression as a player and what's allowed him to maybe take the next step this season?
Well, I think when they put Datsyuk and Zetterberg, when they were playing together on a line, and Filppula was at center, I think there was more pressure on him in a second-line center, even though the opposition would focus a lot on Datsyuk and Zetterberg, obviously. But there was more pressure on him in the middle. And I think when you split up Datsyuk and Zetterberg, and you've got Filppula alongside Zetterberg, they just work so wonderfully together. Zetterberg had been bothered by a sore ankle for about a month, and in that time, Pavel Datsyuk was out too. So I think Zetterberg having Filppula on his wing, and Filppula going to the wing, I think just allows him to play his game up and down. He's tough enough along the boards, gritty enough, not that he's going to go out there and kill anybody, but very smart on the boards, very good puck work along the boards, that I think he feeds off Zetterberg and vice versa. So I think Filppula going to the wing is a big help for Zetterberg, and Zetterberg a big help for Filppula, who's had the breakout year in goals and points, and this is something that they thought was coming from him for a couple of years now. Mm-hmm. But I truly believe the move to the wing is where he should be, and it's a big help. And plus, you've got the luxury of putting him in the middle for faceoffs where he's not too bad either, if, in fact, you have to have another centerman in there.
The latest in Red Wings' young Swedish talent is Gustav Nyquist. He worked his way through college, then he played in Grand Rapids of the AHL. How impressive has he been, and how important is he going to be, in the playoffs as kind of a depth third liner?
Yeah, as a depth guy, and I think they trust him defensively, and that's the thing, you know, where you put a guy like that. We know he led the nation in scoring back in 2010, so we know that he has the offensive ability, but he's a very smart player, and he's one of those guys like Pavel Datsyuk when he first came to the Wings and with the guys and in camp, the Red Wings thought, you know, this guy's quicker with the puck than without it, and you can't say that about a lot of people. But he's very smart. He can play anywhere, really, in the roster. I think they view him as a top six forward down the line. But right now he's going to bide his time. Not getting a lot of minutes. I think it just depends upon game situation. But he is a good guy to have there if there are injuries or somebody needs to move up a spot. But you know the Red Wings. They're not going to rush anybody and put them in a role where they don't think they're comfortable.
We're joined by Ken Daniels, play-by-play voice of the Detroit Red Wings here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Ken, it's been apparent for a while now, especially as the Blues have continued to play as well as they have been, that the Wings are going to finish somewhere in the fourth or fifth spot. Accordingly, has Mike Babcock been sort of biding his time with this team, sort of trying to keep things at sort of an even keel and then getting them ready to sort of unleash a new wave once the playoffs hit?
I don't really know if you can do that. It's not, you know, it's not like turning on a switch, and that's why I say these final games that they've got, They've got Florida in here on Sunday, and then they're in St. Louis Wednesday and home to New Jersey, and then finishing up with Chicago on that Super Saturday when everybody and their mother's playing. But I think they just want to feel good about their game and get to the point now where you're getting guys back into the lineup. I think Johan Franzen has to step up. Yes, he was hurt, but he's really been, you know, somewhat invisible of late. And this is his time of year, right? When playoffs come, Johan Franzen's the guy who steps up. So, and Datsyuk looks to be not, since his injury, I think he played the first few games in adrenaline, and he also is a guy who hasn't looked 100%. But again, if they can use these last four games just to get to that point where they're feeling good about their game and get into that mode where, okay, let's go. I don't think just when the playoffs start you can do that. I think they have to see some progress in these last four games of the season. And wins or losses, whether they're fourth or fifth, they'd like to be fourth for sure, the way home ice has gone. This team looks so comfortable during the 23-game home winning streak, and yet of late at home, they haven't looked comfortable. And again, I think a lot of it has to do with injuries, but get guys healthy now and get into a rhythm now the final four games to get to that playoff where they can get going.
Ken, from a personal perspective, final question here. You know, I think people in Canada remember you from Hockey Night in Canada calling games, I think it was, I guess, the late 90s. If I recall correctly, you called the big Derek Plant goal Buffalo against Ottawa in Game 7 there.
I did.
I remember that.
Memory.
That was a great call. Since then, you obviously moved to Detroit. Can you talk about that transition for you, but also working within the Red Wings organization with Mr. Ilitch and Yzerman and Holland, just, I mean, that organization has been so well run. How has that experience been for you?
It's been amazing. I'm a lot smarter hockey guy now than I was 15 years ago. I left in 1997, and funny you say that about the Derek Plant. We were just talking about that with Pete Weber in Nashville last night.
Really?
Because Pete was in Buffalo at the time and then went to Empire, and he was let go because they were doing simulcast with the radio thing at the time, so Pete was basically out of work then. And we were just talking about that goal last night, in overtime to win
That's
the series, and a great series, and then they went on to play Philadelphia. So, I used that tape from that series. It was during that series that I heard that they were making a change in Buffalo, in Detroit.
Really?
So I was in Buffalo when I heard about that, got a tape to my agent the next day from that series and sent it on. So it's funny you mention that. But to be in Detroit 15 years, Scotty Bowman, when we used to spend a lot of time together when he was coaching, and Ken Holland, and to sit there and listen to these guys talk hockey. And the funny thing about those two, and I always tease Kenny about that, Kenny and Scotty, they always say, what do you think, what do you think? I know they don't care what I think, really, but they're always asking everybody questions. And I'm thinking, why would you care what I think? But they like to hear from everybody, and then they form their own opinions, and that's what's so great about them. And to listen to those two guys and go out and have some ginger ales on the road, as my partner Mickey Redden would say, to spend the time with those guys and just have that wealth of hockey knowledge coming at you for 15 years, and I know how Ken Holland runs the franchise, not the inner workings, obviously, but how he would do things in a certain situation. When I look around the league and see other GMs who have failed or make moves, and I'm thinking, boy, why would you do that? And that's where I see success in Detroit. So I'm spoiled and very thankful to watch these two guys and be a part of this organization for 15 years and just learn about the game.
Ken Daniels, play-by-play voice of the Detroit Red Wings, thanks very much for joining us this afternoon on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
My pleasure, guys. You do a great job. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Ken. Take care.
Ken.
Welcome back to the program. A big thank you to Ken Daniels, Red Wings play-by-play guy, for joining us. In case you missed any of that interview, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, subscribe, and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. Gentlemen, there was a bit of an incident.
Before I get to the incident,
sorry, forgot. You have to remind me. This segment is brought to you by David Carr of Monopoly Realty.
Of course.
You're a real estate agent, Ezzy's quasi-real estate agent.
Yep.
David is a lifelong Winnipegger who brings passion and energy to all of his real estate dealings. Get in touch with David at 230-6129. That's David Carr of Monopoly Realty, 230-6129. Or you can also follow him on Twitter, at David Carr, WPG. As I was saying,
there was an incident.
There was a bit of an incident Wednesday night.
Do you want some backfill?
Please.
So
backfill?
What's
background?
Backstory.
Yeah.
So what happened at the Rangers game was during the third period, we were talking about the game, and Richie said, you know what, Ez, if you have a chance, ask Torts why they only have...
Torts being Rangers head coach, John Tortorella,
right?
a man known for his patience and understanding.
With Larry
no,
Brooks.
Actually, let me just clarify. What happened was this.
Clarifying.
We were sitting upstairs.
I thought this was...
It was like the second period. There's a second shooter. Now, in the second period, and I looked over the bench. I thought, you know, it's interesting. I looked at you guys. I said, it's interesting that the Rangers only have two coaches on the bench. most teams in this day and age are micromanaged. They have three coaches, if not way more upstairs. And like the game is coached. They have iPads. The Rangers have two coaches on the bench.
Tortorella,
Mike Sullivan.
Plus one assistant.
Mike Sullivan.
So the bench looks bare, and it's very odd this day and age, or any day and age, to have two coaches on the bench. I thought that was interesting. So we talked about it.
Yeah, and I said I would ask him the question.
Now, Ezzy, you did some background on his previous years when he's been a head coach there.
Right.
And in Tampa Bay.
This is his fourth year as head coach, but third full year. And to his credit, he's only had one assistant coach in New York. He's always only had one assistant coach. But the issue for us was that Jim Schoenfeld, who used to be the head coach of the Devils, is actually an assistant general manager / assistant coach. I can't speak for Richie, but I thought that Schoenfeld was usually on the bench. It turns out that he is an assistant coach, but never is on the bench. Now, Torts did have two assistants when he was with Tampa.
Mm-hmm.
But he's always had one assistant. So basically the question was, I thought that he always had an assistant. I just wanted to know why one of his assistants wasn't on the bench for the Jets game. It turns out he never has an assistant coach, and that's why he questioned my question.
Let's go to the audio.
If you take out the tonight, it's completely... And the question, he could have been nice.
I was misinformed.
Well, let's play the kind, gentle John Tortorella's reply.
Is there any reason why there's only one assistant coach on the bench tonight?
What's that?
There's only one assistant coach on the bench.
Yeah, and whose bench? Our bench? I don't know how to answer that. That's what we have.
Okay.
What the hell kind of question is that?
So Torts, again, calm, rational person that he did yeah. really appreciate yeah. the question.
Right.
Now,
by the way, that was followed by a good second of silence, awkward silence.
Not surprised. I mean, that you provide awkward silence on this show. Yeah. I can't.
And it was a big scrum. You had five New York writers there.
Yeah. They're also known for being reasonable, rational people.
Was Larry Brooks there?
Brooksy?
Yeah, I don't know what he looks like, so I think he was
Brooksy.
There. But there was a good 15 people in that scrum, and I got some looks.
Can you confirm or deny?
Who gave the worst looks?
Can you confirm or deny that John Tortorella then tried to bite your face off afterwards?
No, I mean, and then Sam Rosen asked a question after. I mean, he'd moved on.
When Sam asked, what did he say? Like, when Sam asked a question, what did he say?
What kind of question is that?
The fact is, we still would like to know why he chooses to only have one assistant coach. I mean, it's funny, and then he got mad.
God forbid he answered the question. God forbid he'd be kind enough to tell Ezzy, not necessarily knowing that Ezzy didn't know that there was one on the bench all year. And then you could actually have explained why he only has one.
And the thing is,
John Tortorella, holier than thou. He's after the game. He needs to get out of town and fly in his first-class jet. And the New York Rangers, James Dolan's first-class jet to wherever the heck they went the next day. Oh, my God. I mean...
You know, he did answer the question.
That's what we have.
That's what they have.
Yeah. Sure, he did answer the question.
He did answer it.
Yeah.
Now, that's a good answer.
Yeah, that's really insightful.
What do you think of the game? We won.
What kind of question is that?
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And cheers.
No, not good enough.
He's a bad boy.
I never seen something stink like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Well, I'm going to step in here, and I'm jeering John Tortorella, because if you mess with Ezzy, you mess with me.
That's loyalty. That's nice to see.
I love it, Richie. Thank you very much for that.
I'm going to cheer John Tortorella. No, I'm kidding. I'm not going to cheer John Tortorella. But, that was an amusing side note for the how it was.
I'm going to cheer Jimmy Slater. We were talking about the Masterton Trophy last week, and it turns out that Jimmy Slater was nominated as the Jets nominee for the Masterton Trophy for the second year in a row. Love Jimmy Slater. Love his game. He's obviously part of the GST line. Got a goal last night. Good for Jimmy Slater. Much, much and well-deserved.
I'm going to wrap up cheers and jeers this week. I'm going to cheer. I'm going to miss her. I'll be honest. I'm really going to miss her. I'm going to miss Mayor Elaine Scruggs.
Where'd she go? She lost?
No, she didn't lose. She's bailing out. She's a rat off a sinking ship. She is not even running for a re-election.
Really?
I forget the guy's name, Beasley.
Beasley,
the city
yes.
commissioner, or whatever yes. his job actually was. Hang on, I'll pull up the.
What about Phil Lieberman? He's still there, right?
What about Lieberman?
Phil Lieberman's still there. You don't need to worry about that.
By the way, we got in tweets and texts from friends and fans that there's two other Jewish hockey players: Eric Nystrom.
Oh, okay.
And Mike Brown.
Oh, there you go. Nice to hear. Yeah. So Elaine Scruggs is not going to run for re-election. She would have lost. Apparently, there's no chance she was going to win. This is her. She will not seek a sixth term in office.
Wow. She's been in place for five terms.
The Coyotes are staying now. Elaine Scruggs is gone. They're done.
Mayor Elaine Scruggs is out, and kudos to her for being smart enough to be a rat right off of a sinking ship.
That's right.
She's only leaving the city $1 billion in debt.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, only a billion. Yeah. It's a city of 250,000 people.
That's okay. Yeah.
So, she's good for her. Way to go, Mayor Elaine Scruggs.
That's cool.
That's it for us here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show this week, but we're going to be sticking around for about 5 minutes to jump on with H&L. Gary just messaged me. We're going to invoice him accordingly. Big money. Big money. Anyways, big thank you to today's guests on the program. That would be Ken Daniels, play-by-play voice of the Detroit Red Wings, Pat Hickey, the Montreal Gazette, and Craig Button from TSN. In case you missed any of the program, it'll be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Subscribe and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. Follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com. And a big thank you to our sponsors, Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, David Carr of Monopoly Realty, and the Cheer Bar and Grill. We will be at the Cheer Bar and Grill tonight. They'll be giving away a shuffleboard table, so be sure to be in attendance at the Cheer for that. Until next Saturday, here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, you know that if it's Saturday, it's Illegal Curve Hockey.
You've been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Join us again for serious hockey talk, Saturdays from noon to 3. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, only on TSN 1290, your official home of the Winnipeg Jets.